Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
Hey, Don Williams here with today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. Real treat for you today. I have Dallas attorney, serial entrepreneur, Bill Richmond. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Man, glad you're here. So tell me, I know you're an attorney, okay, but you have another business that's capturing most of your time and most of your attention. So tell us a little bit about that business, the name of that business, and what you do.
Sure. So founded, left a big law firm 8 years ago to start a business law firm with some buddies of mine who we had all gone to school, gone to our big firms, and decided we were unhappy with the model of how big law was working, loved the clients, loved the work, but not particularly how it was structured. So we started very small and have grown it now, served as managing partner for a while, and have now handed that off to our M&A attorney, Robert Daniel. But Platt Chimo Richmond is the name of the firm, and we have grown to about 28 lawyers with two offices in Dallas and Houston, full service. So all the business things, employment, private equity, commercial real estate, et cetera. And a lot of my entrepreneur journey was through that, right? Had been an employee before at W-2 and then had jumped right into the other side and had made that happen for a number of years. And then last year, through an acquisition slash merger, have started a company called Care Guide Advocates. And so Care Guide does health transparency and advocacy for companies and health plans, ultimately helping people to find affordable care in their area locally. We have a lot of proprietary databases, tools, and processes so that people can find care on the front end that's affordable. But probably our biggest benefit and place where we help people the most is when they're getting surprise bills, out-of-network bills, or just outrageously overpriced hospital bills, and how to leverage financial assistance programs, error analysis, that type of thing, to save that healthcare dollar, again, both for individuals, but also employers and health plans.
So I've been on the insurance side for maybe 15 years, brokered 44 states.
Yeah.
Okay. And transparency and advocacy are two areas that are desperately needed in healthcare in America today.
Absolutely. It's unfortunate. I say it's interesting if there's a thread between the two businesses that I'm in, is that if people were a little bit nicer to each other, you probably wouldn't need lawyers. And if the healthcare system was a little less broken, you wouldn't need Care Guide Advocates. But I seem to have a penchant for finding a place where problems exist and offering a solution. And I really love it. It's what drives me every day. I love when our advocacy team is able to save someone $1,000 or save them $150,000 on bills that would be devastating to them. So it's really, really exciting to be able to help.
Love that. It's great work. So let me ask you, an individual reaches out and contracts with you, or this is a voluntary benefit through their employee plan?
Yeah, so it's mostly through employers. We're actually embedded in health plans as well. So there will be folks who are bundling plans together who will offer our product and offer our services. Sometimes we're on the back end. We have existing advocacy groups who kind of need that extra muscle, so they'll contract with us to help them on the back end, which is really, really exciting when you have a group that does what you do, but they really need the help and they need to up their game. So they come and bring it to us, which is nice. We have a couple of partners who sell on the individual side, and so you can get it individually through them. But mainly, we're looking at big self-insured groups and health plans and even TPAs who realize the future of being a TPA is not just processing. It's actually how can I help deliver new products, new savings for my members and help retain those employer members.
Shocking concept.
Yeah.
How can I deliver more value to my clients?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Love that. Okay. So now I want to take you all the way back to young Bill. So like 5 to 18.
All right.
Okay. In the household where you were raised, mm-hmm. however that looked, was there an entrepreneur? Was there someone who set an entrepreneurial example for you?
Yes. And I would say both indirectly inside the house and house adjacent. So I'll start in the house.
Okay.
So my mom is from a small island in Hong Kong where she went to an all-girls boarding school and got a scholarship to go to college in Chicago to play piano. And so there's aspects of her working life that are also entrepreneurial. But I would say that story itself, like, has always been very resonant. Like, anytime I think something's hard, I'm like, well, I speak the language here and I have family nearby, and she didn't have any of that. And so she actually met my dad in Chicago after college. He had moved from St. Louis to Chicago, and that's where they met. We had her own piano teaching business for a long time, had done that for a while. And so that was part of the entrepreneurial story, including a period of time where she had fired all of her students for not practicing, which I use that example all the time. I'm like, look, my family will do it. I will fire all y'all if you don't listen to me. My dad, he's been in sales for a long time, had been in the dental industry, and his entrepreneurial is much more focused on this, I would say, the sales side. So helped grow businesses, has helped grow departments, and has interacted with dental practices, which we just spent a lot of time growing up going to meet these dental practices, which are a lot of one man, one woman owns a shop. Maybe they have one or two locations. I felt like that house adjacent was the entrepreneurs I got to meet through his business as well. And then my grandfather had started a dental manufacturing business. So that was always kind of a backdrop of my dad's side, was the entrepreneurial nature of that. He had bought a company my grandfather had when he was younger, in his 20s, and had grown it to become publicly traded. Then it came back private and eventually was sold again. But that was always something very interesting. And seeing, you know, the positives of that entrepreneurial journey for him and his family, the negatives.
It's not all positive?
Yeah, shock. Nobody told me that when I signed my entrepreneur contract, right, that there would be some downsides. So
that's awesome. Sounds like a great example. And really admire your mom's courage. Come to a country. We spent 30 days in China a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Today, it's radically different than the U.S. And then even more so. So admire her courage. So after your childhood years, you went straight into university, or you?
I did. So right after high school, went to college, University of Missouri. Definitely did not get the most out of the educational part, but I did in the extracurricular. Like, I worked in the firearms industry, actually, for 3 years. Almost didn't go to law school. Almost stayed.
Wow.
And worked in that business. We got to work directly with the owner of the business, president, worked on gunsmithing books, worked, learned to be a competitive shooter, like helped work on a show on the Outdoor Channel, and got to see this group of entrepreneurs, not just the owner and his spouse who had founded the company, but the C-suite and how they interacted. And I still draw on those lessons today. And then came to Dallas to go to SMU for law school. So did end up deciding to make that leap. One of the executives pulled me aside and said, he said, look, you can leave Central Missouri and come back, but if you don't leave now, you're never leaving, right? And he's like, so just go do this thing. If you don't like it, you can always come back. And got to Dallas, and I was like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah, very good. Dissimilar to my story, I'm from Wichita, Kansas originally, and so love Wichita, Kansas. Glad I left. Many people didn't, and,
yeah,
and I'm sure they enjoy it. I'm glad I left. So after law school, went to work for a big firm.
I did, yeah. So worked for a big international litigation firm in the Dallas office, which was great. Had a smaller office here, so I got a lot more interaction and whatnot. Eventually got recruited to join a boutique litigation firm where I was at. They had about 30 attorneys, and then left about 6.5, 7 years in to start my own firm.
Right. And partnered with a couple other attorneys to start with?
Correct. Two of my buddies from law school who had both been at big firms. So in Platt, Chima, and Richmond, all of us had gone to law school together. Platt, his name is Judge, which is a great name for a lawyer.
Yeah.
He's also 6'7", so that's also really great. Yeah. So Judge had been a commercial real estate attorney, had left. He was like, I'm ready to go back out on my own. He had been in a big firm and had gone to Romy, who's the Chima, and was to go get his business. And Romy's like, actually, I'm leaving too. And so then they said, well, you know, we do commercial real estate law. We're going to probably need a litigator. So they called me, and we had been friends for a long time and done business together. And that's where we jumped off.
Awesome. And you were the managing partner for a while. And now you have exited the org chart?
I am still a partner in the firm. And so still directing, bringing in business, helping to manage some files, but really focused a lot on growing the footprint of the firm and growing our junior partners and our senior associates, our mid-level associates, getting them more reps and experience and building their own books of business. So that's more of what my focus is. But from an EOS standpoint, We implemented EOS when I was in my second year being managing partner, and now I'm just in the owner's box. So no longer on the leadership team, which has been great and an evolution and really awesome.
Okay, so thinking back into your career, I want you to think about a hard lesson, something that happened that when it did happen, it's like, that hurt. Okay, but maybe today, with some perspective, with some time passing, it turned out that it was actually a positive. But do you have a hard lesson you can share with us?
I would say every hard lesson in my mind is you still got the lesson part, right?
Yeah.
So it may have been hard. The first thing that came to mind when you asked that question was my first termination at the firm. So Judge, my law partner, is a fantastic entrepreneur on his own. I'm still trying to learn as much as what I think he has forgotten as an entrepreneur. And he had given me a lot of good advice about how to approach this termination because he had done more in some other businesses that he had been a part of and just the nature of his practice. And I can vividly remember it going south, right? It was like the person didn't understand, which meant there was a failure on my part to really let them know ahead of time, right? Because it should never be a surprise, right? It should be whether it's a review or a termination, that kind of thing. So not as prepared as it should have been. We didn't set it up the right way. And then in the conversation, man, it was nails on a chalkboard, right? Like I was engaging too much on the why, which it's clearly this is not a time for rational thinking. And most times when people are being terminated, even if they are a very rational person, realizing that their adrenaline's going, their shame factor is up, like all of these different EQ things that I would have realized, except I too was in this very heightened state of being sad and disappointed in myself and the person I was having to terminate. And then I draw on that every time I have to have a review or a conversation, positive or negative, right? Like, hey, it's my obligation as the steward of this ship to be able to do it the right way. I mean, that was 6 or 7 years ago now, and I will always remember it. And I got really good candid feedback from Judge, who was, I mean, I think you know how that didn't go the way. And I was like, I know how bad that was. Now let's talk about how I could have done it better, right? And that really sticks with me. And then I think there's maybe the only other one that immediately comes to mind is following my gut when it comes to bad clients. And I don't just mean, I mean in both businesses, but also we regularly have to, on the litigation side, help clients who have worked with someone and gotten into bed in one way or the fashion, whether it's a vendor or an investor or whatever, that it's not good. And we can clearly give them the advice like, hey, if it smells bad in the honeymoon, it probably ain't going to get better when you get to the roller coaster of the real relationship itself, even on the business front. And recognizing that that's important for us too when we're selecting anyone that we're working with across the board. A great entrepreneur friend of mine, Sam Melamed, he always says life's too short to work with jerks. And I think there's various ways, right? Don't work with assholes, don't work with fuck bags, like choose your negative word there. And there's a full gamut of those kinds of people in the world, as we all know. But just remembering that, and I have had a couple of instances where it just wasn't the case.
Sometimes the best answer is no, I'll pass.
Yes.
And that's just the way it is.
It's scary to say no.
And it's hard. It kind of goes, it's counterintuitive to the entrepreneur who wants to say yes and certainly wants to onboard all the business.
Right.
You know, that they can.
Right.
So, but we're all in the people business, regardless of product, service, or experience we bring to the world. We have employees and their people. We have customers and their people. And we have to remember the basics of, hey, this is a people business.
Right. And being able to honestly know the boundaries of your own capabilities and say, you have high standards, I have high standards, I can't meet the standard that you want, but let me get you somewhere else. And that's the most professional entrepreneurial way you can pull the ripcord on something and not have anyone be embarrassed in the room. Because if you got to tell someone no, they're going to want to know why, right? And making it about there, someone had given me that advice and said, make it about meeting their standards. And it's harder for them to go, well, no, look, tell you what, I'll lower my standards to work with you. No, you're just saying like, hey, you have high standards. You deserve to have those. Let me get you to someone who can meet those standards. It's not me.
Love that. So if we knew everything you know, Bill, there's a nugget of wisdom, or in your case, there's a bucket full of nuggets. Okay. But would you share one nugget of entrepreneurial wisdom with us today?
A nugget that was given to me that I'm happy to pass on here and that I revisit and polish and stare at all the time is that the drive for learning is critical on two aspects. One, because if you're resting, you're losing. in the sense of there's a million other entrepreneurs in your business trying to do more. But at the same time, it doesn't always have to be you that's doing it, right? So how do you achieve the balance of learning not only your own craft, but learning how to pass that craft within your organization, whether it's delegation, whether it's outsourcing, whether it's saying no, whatever that may be, which in my mind, when you say no, you're deferring it to the future, right? You're not saying no forever. You're saying, no, I'm not going to do this thing right now until it's the right time for me, for my business, for my team, et cetera. And so that constantly learning and having an open mindset is what enables so many great things, whether it's following 10 or 20 good newsletters or people on Twitter who are entrepreneurs, whether it's taking a moment to listen to the customer and go, you know, they keep complaining about this and saying, well, maybe they're not idiots. I mean, maybe they are, but maybe they're not. Maybe there's something there. Regardless, they're unhappy. How can I address this issue? Learning from your frontline workers, right, about what's happening on the ground. I'm reminded of a story of Intel when they were getting the pants beat off them on their chips, and someone on the front line in a small market was like, look, these guys are coming for our lunch. We need to do something different. And that story of the entire organization pivoting over a 6 to 8 month period to regain market share, all because a frontline manager said something, which was step one. And then step two, the guys at the top didn't have the ego to block them from listening. They were able to look past that and really do it. But that takes a learning mindset. So if you're learning all the time, you're going to better set yourself up to move forward.
I agree. And I think there's always a next step, no matter where you're at. And so you have to learn sometimes how to take that next step and which step to take.
Right.
So if I put you in a time machine, took you all the way back to 18-year-old Bill, and you get to spend a minute or two and share something you wish you knew then that you know now that would have sped you along your journey, what would that be?
I would have said, you won't get to your destination if you haven't picked it. Spend time figuring out the destination. I felt like my college years were a lot of combination of unproductive wandering. Maybe unproductive is not the right word, but like unguided wandering. There's a difference between there's wandering, right? Like being open to new experiences, kind of seeing where things are going to go, et cetera. But then there's wandering that's just like the chances of something great coming out of it is very, very low. And then so I'd say between that and like really determining the line between what's expected of me and what is possible. And so the thing that I see that holds back so many great people is insecurity or what they think is expected of them. And they don't even necessarily know it all the time, right? Like, this is what this kind of person does. This is what people from my family do. Like, this is what people from this town do. You know, we don't do X, Y, and Z. And generally, what that X, Y, and Z thing isn't like, we don't murder people. No, of course, nobody was supposed to be murdering people. But they have set that self-limiter on themselves because they didn't have the imagination to do it. I suffer from that all the time, where imposter syndrome is one of those types of things, which I think every entrepreneur has at some point, if not daily. But the idea of knowing that I should spend time introspecting on the kind of life I wanted to live would have helped me to make a few more different decisions. So about like where I was spending my time, who I was spending my time with, I probably still would have done some stupid shit, which is pretty normal.
Part of being young.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wait, so I should not be doing stupid shit now is what you're saying? And it's still something today, right? Like when I think about where I want to go as a father, as an entrepreneur, as a person, what are the things I'm trying to do? And sometimes I look up and I go, I don't think this is getting me where I want to go. I should probably reevaluate where is it I'm really trying to go and then use that to then measure, am I really taking the steps to get in that direction?
Love that. Power of intention, knowing what you want, what you're shooting for, and then overcoming the chains of your comfort zone. Everybody loves their comfort zone. It's comfortable in there. Why wouldn't you love your comfort zone? It's comfortable.
Yeah.
But of course, the good stuff is outside. And what we know about comfort zone physics is every time I step out of my comfort zone expands.
Mm-hmm.
And so many entrepreneurs are racing out of their comfort zone every day because that's where the good stuff is.
I was talking to some colleagues the other day, and I said, your fear of the fringe is what keeps you from the frontier. By definition, the frontier is the fringe. The other side of that coin is a phrase that I've heard a couple of times that I think is really, really important. By definition, being extraordinary is not ordinary. You have to be different. You have to think different. You have to do different if you want to be something beyond that normal, that ordinary. And in some cases, you know, ordinary makes sense in a season, in a life, in a certain set of decisions. But very few people wake up and say, you know, I just want to be ordinary, or look back at life and go, what I really missed out on was just being ordinary in the dull sense of the word, right? So.
Right. It couldn't hurt me any more than to say, Don, you're just average. Pain and agony.
Good thing you're not. That's why you're doing great things. And that's the point, right? It's chasing that and knowing and saying it is possible, that power of intention, as you mentioned, and all those things kind of Venn diagram overlap with each other, right? The intention, the freedom to be different, to be extraordinary, to set an intention that is outside of the norm of where you are, where you've been, or the imagination of your peer group or your family or whatever it may be, and just go, it's all possible. And that imagination of what's possible is what drives every innovation. By definition, it cannot be something that was normal. It had to have been something that was different if it was going to be new and better and improved.
Love that. Bill, how would the audience reach out and find out about Care Guide Advocates?
So our website is cgasaves.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn. Look up Care Guide Advocates. Care Guide is one word. We got videos and a member journey and a few different things that you can learn about that. And then the law firm is at pcrfirm.com. That's where you can see our different, probably 12 or 13 different practice areas and whatnot. But yeah, both of them are out there on the web and doing fun things.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
And that's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur Show. See you next time.
That's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur. Go to provenentrepreneurshow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.